Thanks for joining the Kids Ministry Collective podcast. Each episode of the KMC is designed to inform and encourage those who love kids and serve in kids and family ministry. Let's join in today's episode. Welcome to this edition of the Kid Ministry Collective podcast. My name is Tom Bump, and this is the second of our Small Church Edition podcast. And we're super excited to continue with this series, as we promised. We're talking about dealing with discouragement. And I'm so happy to have really my Small Church Edition specialist back in the house. Bill Gunter is joining me again, and we want to dive right into this topic. So welcome back, Bill.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me back and working on this Small Church episode series. Eager to talk about dealing with this discouragement, because that's a hot-button topic that we all deal with at some point.
It sure is. And I know, you know, you struck a chord with a blog post with this. And I know, and you know, because we both serve in small churches. And honestly, really, any church size, you're going to deal with this. But discouragement can set in easily, and it can set in quick. And when it does, it's hard. And we want to help today with this episode. Our goal, right up front, is to help you if you're struggling and you're wondering, am I moving into this dark area of discouragement? Or maybe you're already there and you're feeling overwhelmed and you're feeling the waves crashing around you and you just figure, man, I don't even know if I can keep going in ministry. I don't know why I'm going any further in ministry. All those kind of things. How did I get there? How did I get to this place? And how do I get out? That's what this episode's all about, is to help leaders do that. And Bill, you wrote a blog post in your Small Church Kidmin blog about dealing with discouragement. And you specifically talked about how you went to an event and you were the only one who showed up. And it got a lot of response, not just on the blog, but in other Facebook groups that you posted this. Tell me about some of the reaction you were receiving, and why do you think you received such a reaction when it came to the idea of low numbers at events?
Yeah, the blog post I entitled "When No One Shows Up," and it right now it's my number one blog post ever. Bar none, like five times more than other post that I've read, biggest one day readership and all. And I think it resonates so much because we focus so much on numbers and people being there, and we see a lack of numbers as failure. Uh-huh. And so when people don't show up, we see it as a failure. And sometimes it could be poor planning, things of that nature. But it resonated. People commented how, you know, as the fall season's starting to kick in, a new ministry season, people are planning, that it was encouraging to them. They needed to hear that, because we get focused on that. We get focused on the numbers and who shows up. And I've been there, not only as an attendee, but as a planner. And it can be discouraging if you don't handle it properly. And so in the blog post, I talked about how I handled it so as not to get discouraged. But yeah. I was surprised how much it resonated with people.
Yeah. But it doesn't surprise me, because as I look around in some of the Facebook groups, and you're just as active as I am in those groups, I do see a lot of discouragement in our community, and it's heartbreaking, from job changes to staffing changes, strategy changes, church going in conflicts. And there's a hard season. The enemy is waging war, and at times it feels like he's winning. And so I thought, when you and I started talking, we said we need to do a podcast on this topic of discouragement. And like I say, just because we're calling it the Small Church Edition, I think this really does apply to any leader when you're talking about discouragement. But specifically, when you're in a small church, you can feel like more prone to discouragement when it comes to things. And so I wanted to bounce through a couple of big things. We kind of figured the big three areas of discouragement. You mentioned the first one, low numbers with events. That's one cause of discouragement. One of the other areas is lack of volunteers. You know, I know I've struggled with this, where you feel like you're the only one. You have that "if not me, then who" mentality, and so you're the only one that feels like, and sometimes literally are the only one setting up, tearing down, cleaning up, taking out the trash on events, or you're the one that has to field those dreaded Saturday night text messages where the couple volunteers you did have scheduled now are texting you telling you they can't make it because they've got something else that they had planned or they forgot about. I got that dreaded one not too long ago of, "Oh, I forgot we're going out of town on a Saturday morning." And it's like, okay, thanks. And I had no backups, because all my bench was off serving or off for the summer. So I know that's one area. What's the third one? What's that third area of discouragement besides low numbers, lack of volunteers, that creep into small church leaders?
One of the biggest discouragers I see, and I faced it personally, was unmet expectations. We go into certain events and we're looking for certain outcomes. The church I'm at now is a church I was at before, and actually I'm back out for a second time with a different pastor leading it. And they don't have vacation Bible school. He's not a big vacation Bible school advocate in this church, he said, because it flopped. And so I asked them, and surprisingly, somebody in a Facebook group asked the same question, that their VBS was a flop. Oh. And so I asked the same question. No. Why do you say it was a flop, you know? And the answer was because it didn't meet an expectation that he had, or that they had. And I was able to share a story how the first vacation Bible school I did at that church, everybody was jubilant and I was depressed. I was discouraged and nobody knew it. And we'll talk about this later when we talk about like how to handle this kind of stuff. But I was able to share in both cases how I got past that discouragement and what I did to take care of that. But there were times because the expectation wasn't met. I mean, I was depressed. I was bummed out for a week or more. I mean, it stuck with me for a while until
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that when we don't meet the expectations of a senior leader, that becomes personal. It's hard not to take personal, isn't it?
Well, in that case, it wasn't the expectation of the senior pastor or the pastor. It was my own personal expectation.
Oh, okay, uh-huh.
Okay, that's what it was.
We can often become our worst critics, can't we?
I always tell people, never ask me how something went. Ask my wife or somebody else.
Yeah.
Because I will always be harder on myself.
Yeah, that's true. And I know there are other causes to discouragement. And I know some of you that are listening going, I'm writing a list. I've got a list. We get that. And we don't want to go on and on and on with, because that'll be discouraging in itself. And so Bill and I really want to come up with some things that we feel like can help and give some advice of how to overcome some of these things. Now, this isn't an exhaustive list, but I think what we've come up with and what we're going to share here in this next segment is how to help somebody who's struggling with these things overcome some of this. So Bill, when you struggled with the numbers thing, that you had planned an event or you were a participant in an event and you did all the promotion, you did all the things right and whatever, and it just was low numbers. It wasn't what you thought. Again, going back to expectations, it wasn't up to your expectations, what you thought might even be the numbers. How do you get over that? How do you keep that from becoming a real stronghold of discouragement?
You see, I don't always look at low numbers. In my case, I look at no numbers when nobody shows up.
Okay.
Because being in a small church, I can handle small numbers if one or two show up. And I'll get into that in a minute. But discouragement for me is when nobody shows up And the bigger discouragement really isn't that nobody shows up. It's that the few people that show up late.
Wow.
I've had that happen.
Yeah.
Where, you know, a couple of different times.
Uh-huh.
And that's frustrating because it just kind of shows they're not thinking about your time and effort you put into it, that kind of stuff. And that can be discouraging. And I'll just kind of give one. And you can't really control people being late. You can start on time, but it can be difficult when you have two people coming and one's going to be late. You don't want to kind of start all over again.
Yeah, right.
Those
that can be awkward.
that can be very awkward. So that was difficult to deal with. But I had one time where I had an individual who, if I gave her a start time and an end time, for whatever reason, they would lock in on what time it ended. And that became the start time. And so they actually came as the event was ending, thinking it was beginning at that point. And so what I did is I never put an end date, end time. I at least told them what time it was starting. That way they only had one time to focus on. So that becomes communication, because there's not much you can do about people being late and misunderstanding. Now, if you have only a few people to show up with low numbers, one or two, like I said, I've learned to handle that. I had staff that I had in their mindset that no matter who comes, if only one comes or two comes. And at one point, if nobody showed up, we didn't know if anybody would be there. They were there ready to run the program. And in that situation, I was at camp, other people on vacation, which I heard about after things were set up. But I had people in place ready to minister. And one family showed up with a couple kids, and they reached out to those kids like there was a group of 50 of them. I mean, they ran things the way they should be run. And my leaders were on board, but it was the parent that said, no, don't just do this for my kids.
And they're
like, no, we're here. We want to reach them, you know?
Right.
Those kind of things. And somebody posted in a Facebook group, and they said, like, on a Sunday morning, I have the lesson plans all planned out. But sometimes we only have two or three kids. So do I scrap those plans and do something like fun or light or something different?
Right. I've seen that a lot.
Yeah. And the overwhelming response was, no, you do the lesson. And my response was, if you change things because it's not many people, then what you're saying is they're not worthy of your best and you're more focused on the 99 than you are the one.
Oh, amen. Amen.
Those kind of things.
Yes, absolutely. Go ahead. Because
I mentioned this, I think, the last podcast. Like I said, we had a time with youth where nobody showed up, and we knew nobody. You know, we were expecting some, but they were all doing things for God, rehearsing for an Easter thing or whatever, doing things for God. And so, when you look at that perspective, that's what we want them to be doing: is serving God. They don't need to be in my program. Excuse me. They're serving God.
Right.
You know, so right. It becomes perspective.
Yes.
And what you're looking at, you need to look at God's going to bring who he wants to be there.
Right.
It may be one, it may be 100. You just need to be ready to show him Jesus.
Yeah, that is so good. And see, if we change our perspective, is what he's saying, take a good look before you start dwelling on the negative and looking at just the number. Change your perspective and ask yourself, and what were the reasons for it? And yeah, I totally agree. Do it anyway and make those couple feel like rock stars. Sure, you may have to modify some of your plans. You may have to change some few things up and tweak a little bit, but you should be ready for that. If you're as a leader to me, when I coach people, I'm always coaching people to say, hey, make sure you've got a plan B. You should be ready for what if it's smaller numbers, whatever. What also is sometimes small church leaders, because this happened to me. So I'm telling you, I'm this is confession from Tom. I didn't plan for enough. I got so used to low numbers that, you know, it was what I always had. I never expected it to grow bigger. And all of a sudden, boom, I had a lot more. I mean, by a lot more, I'm talking five more kids showed up, and I wasn't planning on those five kids. Now that some people go, why is five a lot? Hey, when you only had four kids or five kids on a regular basis and you just doubled, that's a big deal. And I wasn't ready for it.
Yeah, one time trying to motivate my leaders, I said, this year I'm looking for like a 10% growth. Or maybe it was 20%. I mean, it was a certain percentage of growth. They got all these faces looking back at me like I was crazy. I said, that's three kids. We can't invite three more kids to come.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? So, and what helped me with that, and I know you've read it, is Jim Weidman's book, Stretch.
Uh-huh.
How you always need to be ready for growth. It may not come, but you need to be ready for growth. If you've got, like you were saying, if you have four kids that normally come, and you only set up four chairs, then when they bring a visitor or somebody, that sends a message that you weren't expecting them.
Yep.
You know, they're not important because the chair wasn't ready for them.
Yep.
So you always have a couple extra chairs.
Yep. Do now what you would be forced to do later. So instead of operating like, oh, I only have five kids every week, start operating like you have 10 kids and plan for that and be ready for it and ask God for it. Because why would he give you more if you're not prepared for it, if you're not ready for it? And oftentimes that's it. We've got to be faithful with the few so that God will bless us with more. And I think that's where, if we keep that perspective, just like you said, that was a great word. Your perspective can prevent discouragement. I think that's what we're saying.
And that's what all the three things we're going to talk about, it comes down to perspective and what your focus is.
Mm.
Why are you doing what you're doing?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So low numbers is one thing. Let's go back to, how do we deal with that lack of volunteers? How do we keep a small group of leaders from being a source of discouragement for us?
In my situation, I have, some people will think it's a lot of people participating. And when you think about the small church and I look at percentages, I can't look at that, but they all come with, I can't think of the right word. They all come with certain things that they want, certain expectations or certain requirements.
Mm-hmm.
And again, with our church, we basically look at, you want them to serve once a month.
Uh-huh.
And so that means we need to have, you know, like 10 people to volunteer, you know, 10 volunteers for one age group, another 10 for a different age group, which means we need 20 people, not counting the nursery. And in a small church where you have 80 people total.
That's a lot.
and 15 to 20 are kids.
Yeah.
You know, that's, you're trying to reach half your congregation, half your membership to help out and serve.
Yeah.
So that can be difficult. Now, again, in my situation, I don't mind teaching every Sunday because I can feed myself. I can listen to the message. I can do things to be connected.
Right.
But he still wants me to have just to be in the service at least twice a month.
Mm-hmm.
If nothing else, to have my face there so people can see me and know who I am. We're fortunate to have a family service once a month. And so that's one Sunday. I don't need volunteers except for the nursery.
Mm-hmm.
And I can be in the service. So I usually teach twice a month. And it's working with their life. You have to realize the volunteers have a life outside of serving and doing ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I see the Facebook posts where Saturday night, Sunday morning, so many people leading children's ministry are talking bad about their volunteers.
Yep.
You know, a while ago, somebody complained that a volunteer couldn't serve because they were having back surgery.
Oh my.
Oh my.
And the ministry leader was like, and they couldn't tell me that ahead of time? And I'm sitting back thinking, you don't know your volunteers well enough to know they had back problems?
Yeah. Well, there you go. Yeah.
You know? So it's a two-way street.
Yes.
You know, they could have told us that they're busy with life, planning things while they're recovering. but we should also know our volunteers and what they're going through.
Mm-hmm.
And so you try to accommodate their schedules. And if they need time off, don't, you know, you can share their concern, but don't make it seem like the world's coming crashing to an end.
Right.
That way.
Right.
I had somebody scheduled for this, you know, for this coming Sunday. And last Sunday they said, hey, I just saw in the bulletin I'm scheduled next week. We won't be here. I'll switch with anybody in the future. Just let me know. And I said, it's summertime. I understand. You know, go. You know, plans changed. And I'll be able to take care of that. But I guess the main thing with the lack of volunteers, in a small church, you look around and you realize that your pool is pretty small.
Right.
In a large church, it's discouraging because you see hundreds of people and nobody wants to help.
Right.
You know.
Right. Very true.
But in either case, the catchphrase I kind of use is don't be the captain of a sinking ship.
Okay.
Now, Tom, I know you book cruises for people, which is awesome. Help them with vacations and all, also.
Yeah.
And so,
and I don't want to be on a sinking ship ever.
and when you book a cruise or you kind of promote a cruise, you talk about all the good things that are going to happen,
that's,
right?
That's right. I'm not posting those videos of everything flying across because the ship is out in the open ocean and they're rocking all over. Yeah, no, I'm not posting all that stuff. I mean,
how many people are throwing up overboard because of seasickness?
Yeah, yeah.
And other negative aspects that can go on a cruise, but
right.
Most people don't experience because
right.
I hear cruises are awesome. But no, you see a ship that's sailing well and is enjoyable and things are in order. But so many times when we talk about children's ministry, we talk about the doom and gloom. We need you or we have to shut down a classroom. We need you or this.
Right.
We can't do this without you. And they never once talk about what God's doing. And that's my big thing, you know. Share what God's doing in your ministry. Because I go back to Henry Blackaby's Experiencing God. People want to be where God's moving.
Yes.
Right. And if you can share what God, if you can share what God's doing, they're going to want to be a part of it. And if you don't see God working in your ministry, then you've got bigger problems. And that's the bottom line.
Wow.
You know, do you see people coming? Do you see people more eager to learn about God? And admittedly, in children's ministry, we don't always see the fruit of our labor and what happens. But I know that every now and then God gives us a glimpse of the impact he's having through us to keep us going.
Mm.
But you can't be complaining about your volunteers on Saturday night and Sunday morning and then saying, hey, welcoming them, you know, and say you're doing a great job. You know, appreciating them.
Yes.
Those kind of things.
Wow. Those are some, again, it's flipping the script in your own heart to change your perspective and to see your volunteers in a different way. And the other part, too, is helping equip them. I mean, a lot of times there are things we can avoid. We can avoid certain things if we work with our team and we help it become part of our DNA that here's what you've got to do. And here's the expectations. And oftentimes, what we don't inspect, we lose all the time. And so if we don't inspect our systems and how we're doing and how we're caring for our volunteers, they can easily drift away, feel not cared for. They can get discouraged. And if we're not telling stories, if we're not shouting from the rooftops, hey, look at what God's doing. And man, you want to be a part of this team. This is where we're having the most fun. You know, it can be little things of taking a picture and giving a shout out to one of your volunteers and saying, hey, this person's a rock star. This Sunday, you should have seen them, you know, blowing bubbles in the preschool room and having, you know, it's amazing when people start seeing that and seeing how much fun serving is and what they're doing. It draws
people in. And like you said, you gave the example, you should have seen how they were blowing bubbles. Be specific.
Yes.
About what you
yes.
see them doing and how God's using them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially with the guys. If you want guys, be specific and say, hey, I saw how Johnny responded to you.
Yes.
When he reached down to him and asked how his dog was doing or whatever.
Right.
Be specific.
Yeah. And if you change your perspective, having fewer volunteers, and here's the other part too. Open your eyes and your heart, because sometimes you have more volunteer prospects than you think. Oftentimes people forget. Why not train older children to minister to younger children? Sometimes we forget the current generation is better at reaching their own generation than we are. And why not train them up and raise them up to be leaders? Give those fourth, fifth, sixth graders who might start mentally and spiritually checking out, give them a role, give them something significant, and have them serve where adults aren't willing to serve. Honestly, Bill, that's how I got my start in ministry. I was 11, 12 years old, and on a Sunday night, nobody wanted to take care of the kids, and we had family, young families giving feedback to my father, who was the pastor, that they didn't want to come out to evening service because there wasn't anything for their kids. Even as entertaining as my dad made the worship services on Sunday nights for kids to participate in, he always tried to make sure it was kid friendly. A lot of times he even did a sermon in a sack time for the kids to come up front with him and sit down, and he would do a magic trick or an object lesson with us, to get us involved. And he would talk to us during his messages. There were still some families that were freaked out by having their children, and there's a whole other podcast. We'll talk about your family services at another time, because I know you do that, and you've again flipped the perspective on that idea. But when it comes to the lack of volunteers, sometimes we forget that we can go after and use younger people to be leaders, and they will lead. They will step up if you train them and equip them and you give them a significant role and you give them a name badge and you give them some square feet to stay in. They will rise above your expectations. And you know what? That can be a huge encouragement to you to know that I may not have a ton of adult leaders, but if you can leverage your teenagers and your older children and make them leaders, you'll be amazed at what they can do. So I think that's an area where you can fix some of this problem of dealing with discouragement when it comes to volunteers.
It is, and there's also a secondary benefit that you didn't mention. I mean, I grew up in a small church. As a teenager, I was taking up the offering, greeting, lighting the candles, and all kinds of stuff, serving in the local church. And I've implemented programs in my own church where I had, like you said, older children that were kind of checking out, wanting to be in youth or different things. I gave them areas to serve. And what happened was the younger kids saw the older kids serving. And so as they got older, they wanted to begin to serve as well.
Mm.
And the other side benefit to that is we all hear the stat about how youth leave the church when they become adults.
Right.
And I truly believe that one reason for that is because as they've grown up, the church has said, there's no place for you here.
Right.
You can go on a mission trip someplace else.
Yeah.
You can help in VBS because we're desperate. Yep. But other than that, you have to be in our program, and they don't have an opportunity to serve. So if you get, and it's proven in your case and in my case, if you give children and youth an opportunity to serve, the chances of them staying in the church and serving God past 13 years grows exponentially.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Boom. All right. So we've hit how to change our attitudes and our actions and our perspective on low numbers or no numbers. We've talked about how to change our perspective and flip the script when it comes to the idea of lack of volunteers. But then there's that third one of unmet expectations. So what do we do when we hold an activity and our expectations are not met?
Once again, you flip the script. The example I kind of teased earlier about Vacation Bible School,
mm-hmm.
how I was discouraged and depressed after mine, how the pastor felt Vacation Bible School was a flop and didn't work. And somebody posted on Facebook recently how their Vacation Bible School was a flop.
Right.
And the reason why we all felt it was a flop was the same reason by chance.
And what was that reason?
Because we were in small church settings, and we wanted to go out and reach the community and looking for a lot of community engagement coming into our church to participate in Vacation Bible School. Mm-hmm. And some of that's because we see the bigger churches where they can draw from the community and kids from other churches that come and kind of double, triple their numbers. But in a small church, you don't have that. And in my case, it was the first Vacation Bible School we were doing in the church. And because we're a small church, we actually held it at another church's facility because we didn't have one. We were renting a movie theater. And so I wrote up this grant proposal, got a couple $1,000s to help fund Vacation Bible School, and talked about how we were going to reach the community and bring in all these kids to impact them with the gospel. And that week came, and do you know what kids were there? Huh. Our own church kids and maybe some of their friends and family. And that was it.
Wow, yeah.
And so at the end of the week, I'm looking back saying, we didn't reach the community. And now I've got to write a report for how this grant money was used. And we didn't do what I proposed, what I said we were going to do. The pastor said, with the Vacation Bible School, we only had our kids. We didn't reach the community. The person on Facebook said they publicized as much as they could in the community, and they only had their kids. And I explained my story to them. That first Vacation Bible School, I was depressed. I was discouraged. And I don't think anybody knew it except my wife, because I told her. And even she wasn't depressed. Everybody thought it was a great week. And I walked away defeated.
Huh.
And it took me a while to get out of that. But then the next year, we had a Vacation Bible School. We had in the same location, the same kids. And I left exuberant, energized, and excited. And only one thing changed between those 2 years. And again, it's perspective. It was my perspective. Instead of looking at it being an evangelistic activity or event, which we still wanted to reach kids, but instead of looking at that as the majority, the main reason for the event, the main reason I saw for holding Vacation Bible School in my small church was it was a more intensive time of discipleship and fun for children in my church. So when I shifted my perspective, my expectation from something our church wasn't going to reach to something we could reach, then I left not being discouraged, satisfied.
Right.
Now, those times when you are discouraged because it didn't meet your expectation, what you need to do is kind of sit back and take a bigger picture and say, how did the week go? Get other people's perspectives. And you will probably see different wins where somebody came to know the Lord. Somebody brought a friend who might not normally come, just one person, but maybe somebody came. But the stories you hear from parents afterwards, the discipleship aspect and how they're posting on Facebook, how their kids had a great time and learned about God.
Yeah.
Positive things happen. You have to focus on those positives and those wins.
Right. Take a look at the relationships that were being built. And how we all know that the deeper the relationships, the deeper that you can speak spiritual truth into the life of a kid, because they know you care. You showed up every day. And kids notice these things. They know that there's not a big crowd here. But if they see you bouncing off the walls with excitement like there's 500 kids there, that means the world to them. And that's something they will never forget. That you made them feel valuable, you made them feel important, you made them feel heard, you made them feel safe, you made them feel known. Those are powerful, life-changing things. And if we would just take our perspective and go, wow, look at that. The future is bright when you think about what you just laid a foundation with. Whether you do this in a Bible school format, but even the week-in, week-out grind that it feels like sometimes on Sunday mornings, just know that every hour you leverage for the kingdom, Think about what our amazing God's going to do with that little bit. Because he has a habit of taking little and making a big deal over it, you know?
He took 12 people and changed the world.
He did. He did. So, all right, I want to give a final word of encouragement, because I still feel like in my heart, and I know there are people out there listening to this episode, and they are struggling with how to handle life and ministry because they are in the middle of the discouragement. They're trying to flip the script. They're trying to see a different perspective. But right now, they just feel like sometimes they haven't seen it yet. They haven't seen the positives yet. They haven't seen the wins yet. And they're in the middle of this. Bill, what could you say to them to help them start taking those steps to overcome discouragement?
You got the obvious pray, which we don't mention enough.
Yep.
And focusing on God. But the main key I would want to leave people with is don't walk alone. You need to have support from other people, people you know in ministry that maybe are in the same scenario or the same situation, that you can go to and talk to and say, hey, this is really bothering me. And just share with them, somebody you can share openly and honestly with. I've got people that call me every week I can talk to that are in ministry. I can say, hey, this is what I'm facing. What advice do you have for me? The important thing to know is you're not alone in the battle. You've got Jesus walking by your side, but you've got other men and women that are there going through the battle with you. Don't fight it alone. You know, reach out to somebody to walk alongside you.
You know, I've been there myself. Like I said, Bill is in the middle of it right now. Not the discouragement part. I'm glad he's not discouraged. At least I hope he's not. But I know he's
good right now.
Okay. He's in the middle of a small church ministry, and he's pushing and pushing and pushing and watching what God does with what he has. And he and I, you know, one of the reasons why we're part of the Kid Ministry Collective community is because we care and we know the value of what he just said. Don't go alone. I've got a special announcement for those of you that are listening to this episode. And if you're serving right now in a church of 200 or less, I want to make something available to you. I want to come alongside of you. Right now, I'm forming some coaching groups designed to help a leader of a church of 200 or less. I was a leader in that size church for a long time. And, you know, like you, I wanted to attend conferences, but I didn't have the thousands of dollars or the time to go and attend. I wanted to improve myself as a leader, and I wanted to grow my ministry. And I saw coaching programs and academies out there, but I couldn't afford the thousands of dollars it took to get into those. When I got close to one program, I looked at the leaders that were leading the program and realized that they were serving in churches that were multiple times my size. And that's all they ever knew. And so I knew they really weren't going to understand my context. And so I did all I could, and I continued to struggle in and out of discouragements, in and out of thinking about quitting, in and out of wondering why, and if only I could get to a bigger church, things would change. And I think that's why I'm so passionate about what I'm going to offer. With Kid Ministry Collective Coaching, or what we call KMC Coaching, I have a special thing for you, just those of you that are listening with this size of church. I'm starting two different coaching groups. They're going to be up to four total people, five counting me, so four other leaders in small churches in similar contexts. And we're going to meet one time a month for 1 to 1.5 hours a month. We're going to specifically look at hot button issues, the things that you're currently struggling and wrestling with, and we're going to walk through some solutions and brainstorming and problem solving formats to help you fit some solutions and ideas that you can take back to your context and implement and win. This is going to be a 4-month program starting in early August. Like I said, there'll be two groups, one that will meet during the daytime hours and one that will meet in the evening hours. And I'm doing this all for basically $25 a month. I tried to make it so that anyone could afford this, because I don't want money to stop you from getting involved in this. and getting the help and encouragement that you need. So if you're interested, you can go to kmccoach.net. When you get to kmccoaching.net, you'll find a tab that says coaching, or you'll select the link in the show notes and it'll take you directly to the coaching page where you can scroll down and there's an info box that you can fill out at the bottom. All you need to do is make a note that you're looking for the small church coaching groups, and then I'll be in touch. Now, the space is going to be limited to this group, and once it fills up, there'll be a waiting list, and I'm sure there's going to be one. So you're going to want to do this fairly quickly when you listen to that, when you listen to this episode and jump in. If you didn't get into this one, contact me anyway, because there will be more groups starting. Here's the other thing. Bill has a fantastic resource for small church leaders. And Bill, tell us about smallchurchkidmen.com.
Okay, it was started because I saw in Facebook groups where people would post questions and get all these big church answers that couldn't relate. And so I said, we got to reach out to small churches. So I started smallchurchkidmen.com, just kind of share my experiences and get some dialogue going, to try to provide some support, encouragement, and resources to those people serving in children's ministry in a small church.
All right. So we have several resources available that you can get involved in. And like I say, go to kmccoach.net. It'll take you to actually to tombump.com, which is my personal website where I blog and do different things and offer other coaching opportunities. But there will be a small church form for you to fill out. Go there, fill that out, jump into one of these coaching groups that you can get involved in. But definitely go check out smallchurchkidmen.com. Reach out to Bill when you need help and encouragement. And I know you can catch him online, on Twitter, on Facebook, in the KMC Facebook group. Be sure to direct questions right at him, tag him, he'll answer them. Sometimes he'll even joke with you and tease you, like he does with me all the time. But usually he won't send you anywhere goofy, even though sometimes he's done that to me.
You'll behave.
That's good. So, hey, again, thanks, Bill. I'm loving these small church editions. I can't wait. We're going to be doing another one real soon here. So keep watching for that. Bill, thanks for making time out of your busy schedule to jump on here on the KMC podcast with me. It's been great having you again.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. These have been great. Looking forward to lots more.
All right. Well, that's it, guys. So join us again for the next episode of the KMC. We'll talk to you again soon. You've been listening to the Kids Ministry Collective podcast. We hope you've been informed, encouraged, and entertained for these few moments. If you'd like to connect with us, we encourage you to join the Kids Ministry Collective Facebook group or contact me on Twitter at PTBump. We'd also love for you to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. It'd also mean a lot if you'd leave a review for us so that we can help others learn about this podcast. Our goal of the KMC comes from Proverbs 27:17. As iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. We hope you'll join us again real soon for another KMC podcast.